Greetings, dear listeners, and welcome, landlubbers, to a new episode of It's a 90s Christmas Podcast, where we keep the Christmas spirit alive, just as you were used to as a kid. I am one of your hosts, Lasse Vogt.
And I'm your other host, Lyle Perez.
And this piratey intro is here for a reason, dear lads, but I think you know already. Okay, I'm stopped doing this now. I sound like a drunk Russian.
Yes, you did. For a minute.
How are you doing, Lyle?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm actually also pretty good.
Good. That's good. What did we do for this episode? Because I was a little bit confused.
As always, yeah. Today is one of those kind of like cheating episodes. Because we are doing Steven Spielberg's Hook from 1991. How is that a Christmas movie, you ask? Well, it actually takes place during Christmas. There are several Christmas ornaments being shown. I think there's a Christmas tree, there's a wreath. There is the theme of family and stuff like that. There's snow.
Well, the cool thing of doing this episode, what I found was an article, BuzzFeed, of 27 Reasons Hook is actually the perfect holiday movie. So in the course of the discussion, I will go through all 27 for you.
Oh, that's great.
Because watching it going, there is really no Christmas in this movie. And then I was like, why is it in the Wikipedia under it's a Christmas movie? And then I found this article and I started reading it going, okay, yeah, I guess a lot of this stuff went over my head. But yeah, we saw Hook. Hook from, what was the date?
1991.
Yeah. Which is a good year, I would say. A good 90s year, 91.
Yeah, I mean, right at the beginning.
Cool.
Just 1 year after Home Alone.
Yeah, 1 year after Home Alone. And the same director, no?
No.
No?
Home Alone was Chris Columbus.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was the same composer, my friend.
Yes, the same composer. I don't know. I was hardly thinking of Back to the Future. I was like, yeah, we did Back to the Future. It was a Christmas movie, but nobody knew.
What?
Yeah, apparently.
Back to the Future is a Christmas movie?
Shh. We'll talk about it later.
Okay.
So, Lasse, tell us a little bit about this Christmas Hook Peter Pan pirate movie.
Well, okay, just like I said, it's directed by Steven Spielberg. The screenplay was written by James V. Hart and Malia Scotch-Marmo. A screen story by James V. Hart and Nick Castle. And it's based on the book and play of James M. Barrie, the original author of the Peter Pan characters. The quick synopsis, which we stole from Wiki, IMDb, is... When Captain Hook kidnaps his children, an adult Peter Pan must return to Neverland and reclaim his youthful spirit in order to challenge his old enemy. Pretty self-explanatory, actually.
Very self-explanatory. I was confused. I was entertained. My daughter was scared. I don't know if you noticed that.
A little bit, yeah.
When there was a lot of close-ups of Captain Hook, she would hug my wife tighter and tighter. And then I'd look over, I got some pretty good pictures of her staring at the TV, very, very scared, I guess. So I'll probably post those on the Facebook page for this episode.
Yeah, can be as I remember watching this as a kid, and I was only familiar with the Disney Peter Pan one. And so a lot of the darker stuff kind of caught me off guard, and I got sick during the movie, and we had to stop it, and we... watched it later until the end. But I was very weird as a child. There were certain things I just couldn't cope with, and so it was just no, stop it.
Well, I never really saw this movie as a kid. I would see it in passing, like if it was on TV, my brothers would be watching it, I wouldn't be watching it. I would walk by and I would see a little bits and pieces of it and just continue walking. I had zero interest in this movie.
How come?
I don't know. I guess the same reason why I don't care much for the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. It doesn't interest me for some reason. It just doesn't.
You don't like pirates, are heresy.
I don't know really what it really is. I just, when I was trying to prolong watching this movie, but... You kept bringing it up. So I said, fine, let's just watch Hook. Let's get it over with. It was okay. I can see why 10-year-old me wouldn't want to watch this movie. Overall, though, it was fun. Now that I see it as an adult, I can kind of grasp the meaningness of it. Mm-hmm. Of he's going back to go save his children. But I gotta admit, I was confused through a lot of it.
Yeah, I mean, at the beginning, when you are just thrown into it without really knowing the storyline.
Yeah, that was weird, because at first I was like, okay, they gotta be married. And then when they got there, I was all like, wait a minute, are they related? Are they brother and sister? Because they're supposed to be going to visit relatives, it seems. And then I started thinking, who is the relative? Is it him? Is it her? Are they brother and sister? I thought they were married. Don't they have kids together? And yeah, it just turned into a big old cluster.
Yeah, even though I rewatched this movie like a couple of weeks ago with my brother and his girlfriend, I forgot that Peter Pan's wife is actually Wendy's granddaughter. Because that's one of the main storylines. The storyline, which was written by Ed Sutton for IMDb. So thank you, Ed Sutton, whoever you are, and yes, wherever you are out there. If you're listening to this, we mentioned your name, so don't worry. we acknowledge the trouble you went through by writing this. The actual storyline is Peter Pan has grown up to be a cutthroat merger and acquisitions lawyer and is married to Wendy's granddaughter, as I said. Captain Hook kidnaps his children and Peter returns to Neverland with Tinkerbell. With the help of her and the Lost Boys, he must remember how to be Peter Pan again in order to save his children by battling with Captain Hook once again.
Yes, and it's the Lost Boys, the group of kids, not the vampires. It would have been a much better movie if the Lost Boys were vampires.
That caught me off guard. The Lost Boys, indeed. Tell us who's in it.
All right, this stars the late Robin Williams as Peter Pan / Peter Banning. And we had Dustin Hoffman, who I did not know played Captain Hook. I did not know that. I only realized it probably about halfway through the movie. I was perusing IMDb, looking who these people were, because a lot of them look familiar, but I just didn't know from where. And I was like, whoa, Dennis Hoffman.
Dustin Hoffman, yeah.
Rain Man himself. He is Captain Hook. We had Julia Roberts, who was Tinkerbell. I didn't know that was supposed to be Tinkerbell. Dennis Hopkins as Smee.
No, Bob Hoskins.
Oh, Bob Hoskins. Excuse me. Dennis Hoffman.
Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper, wasn't he?
He was also in Super Mario Bros.
Yes, that's where I was getting confused, because I realized that was Mario. And I made a big scene during the movie going, whoa, that's Mario. I did not know.
And your kids were like, Mario, where?
Yeah, and everyone was looking at the TV going, where's Mario? Where's Mario? I was like, he's right there. But they had no idea what I was talking about. We have Maggie Smith as Granny Wendy, who surprised me, because she, in this movie, she looked already like very elderly. And this was 91. And then I looked up the actress and I said, she's had to have passed already. She's still alive.
Yeah,
she is still alive and kicking, still working.
She's all, yeah, she's incredibly awesome. Yeah, I think she was like in her 50s when she did this role, and they put a lot of heavy makeup on her to make her appear way older. So that makes sense.
Yeah, and then we had Caroline Goodall as Maria Banning, and Charlie Corsmo,
yes,
and Amber Scott as Peter's children, Jack and Maggie. And I realized that little boy is the same guy from the movie, from the 90s movie, Can't Hardly Wait. He plays the nerd in that movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You never saw that high school weird comedy?
No, I didn't see one. I know him from Dick Tracy. He plays the kid in Dick Tracy.
Oh, I never really saw Dick Tracy, sadly.
Yeah, but yeah, he was in that just a year before this one.
Oh, nice.
There was some other stuff where he showed up in, but yeah, Charlie Cosmo was one of those kid actors at the time who was kind of like the go-to kid whenever they couldn't get Macaulay Culkin or Elijah Wood.
Or Elijah Wood, yeah, definitely. The movie also featured Dante Basco as Rufio, which that was probably, he was a good character. He was the leader of the Lost Boys.
Yeah, my parents don't like him at all.
Why?
I don't know, maybe like because he brings the sort of modern edge to the movie they really don't like in Neverland. I don't know. I actually, you know, as a kid, we didn't really enjoy him either. But he has grown up. He turns in one of the better performances in the movie, actually, in my opinion.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Yeah, he has a good arc also.
Yeah. We had Arthur Mallett as Tootles.
Who was originally supposed to be played by Richard Attenborough.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but Spielberg couldn't get him, so he cast him a few years later in Jurassic Park.
Oh, nice. But we had a couple of other Lost Boy kids. We had Isaiah Robinson, Jensen Fisher, Rashawn Hammond,
yeah,
James Matteo, and Thomas Tulak as the main Lost Boys.
Indeed. Just a few years ago, actually, the main Lost Boys got together again
and
took a photo in costume.
Oh, nice.
So, including Rufio. So you have like a comparison photo, like we kind of like recreated a group photo, and all of the kids are... It's amazing. Dan Tobosco, actually, he has a good career now as a voice actor. He voices the evil prince in the Avatar: The Last Airbender series, mm-hmm. in the original series. He has worked a lot with the nostalgia critic Doug Walker, and he has also done a few years ago. He has done a short film, which is about the backstory of Rufio.
Oh, really?
Which actually ends with him going to Neverland, and he has a cameo in that, I think, as a teacher or something.
Oh, but nice.
And there's another kid playing a young Rufio. So because it was actually, the character turned out to be a fan favorite with many people.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a crowdfunded little thing, which was really sweet. But yeah, just a little trivia for you there.
Well, he was a good character. Sad, spoiler alert, I guess, he dies. But
yep.
I didn't know that they could kill anybody in that movie.
That's a ballsy move, I have to say, mm-hmm. to straight up kill a kid. I mean, yeah. He's one of the older looking boys, but still, my mother is still not really comfortable with that. But I'm like, you know, have to show that the stakes are kind of high and that Hook is a very cruel character. I don't mind it that much, but of course it's sad.
It is very sad. But what are you going to do?
Yeah.
He dies.
What are you going to do? There's the...
I thought, you know, I thought for sure Julia Roberts' character was going to come and sprinkle some fairy dust on it, and he was just going to magically wake up, but no, didn't happen.
Come alive.
They didn't even do anything with his body. They pretty much, after he died, they just left him there, and everyone was all happy afterwards.
Yeah, I'm sure the other Lost Boys then picked him up and then buried him. I think so.
I would hope so.
I'm pretty sure. But yeah, at the end, all of the Lost Boys vanish, and except for like a dozen of them.
And not even a dozen.
Yeah, and you see like all those dead tyrants laying around in the background. Oh boy, yeah. Before we get into the actual trivia and some other stuff about the movie, there's some stuff to say. The cinematographer was Dean Cundey, who shot a lot of effects-heavy films, among them many John Carpenter movies, the Back to the Future trilogy,
mm-hmm.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Jurassic Park, and Jack and Jill.
Jack and Jill, the Adam Sandler movie?
Yes.
Boring.
Yeah, I know. But I think they just got him as a cinematographer on that because they did like some green screen work so Adam Sandler could be twice in the same frame.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's the reason why they got... Yeah, Dean Cundey is Jack and Jill, the peak of his career.
Oh, boy. Well, it currently has a 28% score on Rotten Tomatoes. We are talking about Hook, not Jack and Jill. I'm pretty sure it's probably less than that. It was based on 43 reviews with an audience score of 76. Why do the audience and the critics never get along?
I don't know, that often happens. Sometimes they get along. With Marvel, usually they do.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Compare this to Marvel movies. I don't know.
Yeah, the critics' consensus reads, "The look of Hook is lively indeed, but Steven Spielberg directs on autopilot here, giving in too quickly to his sentimental syrupy qualities." Do you agree with that? Do you agree with the Rotten Tomatoes score?
If we were basing it on if this is more of a Christmas thing, I would say, yeah, the score has to be really low. But the movie overall was fine.
Yeah, I think so too. It's really not a bad movie, but weirdly, Hook got panned.
Nice pun.
Thank you. I worked hard on that now, actually. Just came up with that. I mean, that was a kind of like a... I don't know. Maybe that was the time where people just caught on with the sentimentalities of Spielberg. There's actually really a noticeable break in the movie because the first two-thirds are very psychologically rich in a way, and kind of darker. And as soon as he becomes Peter Pan, it turns into the Spielberg schmaltz a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, then it actually turns into generic kids movie with stage fighting, with action, with slapstick. I mean, there's slapstick off throughout the movie, but where it really takes the center stage for a little bit. And I don't know, there's still some interesting stuff going on there, but they're usually like that psychological underbelly is sort of gone at that point, which I find really interesting. Maybe it was some kind of like studio demand where you have to brighten it up for the family, you have to throw in the big action scene and stuff like that.
Yeah, it seems like they probably did that just to appease.
Because as soon as Robin Williams becomes Peter Pan, there's also this weird thing going on, because he, and that's only in the very beginning when he's Peter Pan, like when he interacts with Tinkerbell and he's like oh, we need a thermometer and then stuff, it's awful, and it's like he's acting like a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not what Peter Pan should be like. He should, because you get the sense that Hook was scared of his kid, and he wouldn't be scared of this one, because there's what I really love about this, before we get into some more of a background stuff, what I really love about this is the sense of dread and atmosphere all throughout it, especially one of the early stages when he goes up to the room for the very first time in years.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees like the drawings on the wall, and the music swells, and you hear you hear like thunderstorm going on, and then the ship bells and stuff like that. It's that's one of my favorite scenes.
It's very sinister at that point.
Yeah, it's very sinister. Also, when Hook takes the children and stuff like that, it's like Satan coming at with a screamers. It's like a scene from Poltergeist when the blankets fly up.
Yeah, it is a little weird.
And also when one of the other scenes when he gets shown the picture, the picture in the book. And it's the picture of Peter Pan, and there's this kind of menacing sense to that picture. And he actually has his also like his arms. He's standing in the Peter Pan pose, mm-hmm. and then he just lets his arms go.
I noticed that.
Yeah, which is a great detail. And this actually, watching it with you, this was the first time I noticed when he's up in the room and closes the window,
mm-hmm.
and he's getting caught. Like Peter, he also strikes that pose.
Yeah, he does it. He does it a few times.
Yeah, I love, but I never noticed that.
No.
Which is really great. Hmm. But yeah, there's this very interesting, dark, psychological stuff going on, which I think was the reason why they did this kind of story and just not the usual Peter Pan stuff. Because I think it was Roger Ebert who said, like, why didn't Spielberg just do Peter Pan? And I think the reason is because they saw a very interesting potential of a story in this concept. And to me it really works, and there's some cool stuff going on there, and especially with the relationship between the characters. And I mean, this is something Robin Williams has played before, like the overworked dad, also like who has like the goofy side to him. And I actually think he does a solid job with the kids and selling the lawyer stuff and all that.
Oh, he does. He has a pretty good range on acting. Well, he had, I should say.
Yeah, this really shows, and your wife mentioned that too, this really shows how much he's missed. Like, how early he had to go, and how amazing he was. Like, in every, even though like some of the movies he picked weren't all that great, he usually wasn't the problem.
Mm-hmm.
He was so dedicated, and in this one, like, he has a lot of physical comedy bits. He throws his voice. He has some great timing. Yeah, you can see why he was picked, this was actually the movie got actually nominated for 5 Oscars.
Oh wow.
Got best costume design, visual effects, art direction, makeup, and best song, When You're Alone by Leslie Bricusse, who we already know from Home Alone, and John Williams. Dustin Hoffman was nominated for a Golden Globe, while Julia Roberts got nominated for a Razzie Award.
What? I thought she did fine.
I also thought she did fine. I mean, maybe there could have been a better actress for this, but I actually think she really pulls this role off. I actually really like her in this. I find her charming. I find her enjoyable. The only thing I don't like about her is that whole kind of like forced love triangle stuff they do for about two minutes.
That seemed kind of weird. really.
That reeked of like a studio demand.
Yeah.
It was like,
come on, studio, just leave it alone.
Yeah, for one point, like, okay, we have to give Julia Roberts a breather and have her to be normal sized for once.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, that came out of left field when she turned big, and I was like, wait a minute here.
And the other one is just, okay, we have to be like, I mean, we have to make a kind of like one of the romantic leads, because this actually gives you a very weird sense of her, because she always has this in the Peter Pan story, and overall she has this really interesting relationship to Peter Pan,
mm-hmm.
where she's kind of like a troublemaker. She's kind of like the chip on his shoulder, but she also seems to be like a guardian for him. She's a lot of things, but I never saw her as like a lover.
I never did either. More like a good friend, maybe sister,
mm-hmm.
would be a good way of describing it.
And I think this is the only Peter Pan adaptation where she actually talks.
Oh, okay.
Because of course you can't hire an actress of Julia Roberts' caliber and doesn't have a little talk and just ring a bell or stuff like that. She has to. But this is the only adaptation I think where she can speak English and not just have like a sign language and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Ludwig Vincennier in the 2003 Peter Pan adaptation, she really pulled off a great Tinkerbell just with expressions and physical comedy and, nice. And sounds and stuff like that without saying a word.
Hmm. Well, I've never seen it, so.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they reference a lot of the Peter Pan backstory.
Okay.
In this, like when she mentions like, I drank poison for you, that's from the original tale, and then he brought her back to life through clapping,
mm-hmm.
and there's kind of a reference to that. And I mean, she honestly, I really think she does fine, but
she does a good job. It's not like she played it over the top. Well, some of the things could have been a little over the top, but other than that, it was fine. I mean, it was a role that needed to be done. She did a good job. And that's the end of it, really.
Yeah, and apparently, to go into some of her trivia, she was very, very hard to work with. Due to the isolation required by the heavy use of green screen for her role, she even had a mental breakdown and had to go to the hospital.
Oh, boy.
And at one point, she fled the production to another country because of failed marriage plans. And Spielberg, like, said, come back this instant. And Spielberg recalled his time with her and said, so exhausting that he never worked with her again.
Oh.
Yeah, but kind
that's
of...
That's sad to hear.
That's sad to hear, I know. I mean, they pulled it off good. You know, what of course matters is the end result.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always sad when you find out that there's kind of like a troublesome production going on.
Yeah, it's never good when an actor and the director or two actors don't get along and all of a sudden one of them's gone. We were just watching... Lethal Weapon, the TV show?
Mm-hmm.
Riggs apparently is dead now, and they got Stifler in the role. I was like, okay, I can get behind Stifler, but I didn't know they were gonna kill the other character off. But reading about it, he got in a fight with some other people in the production, and that's why he was fired. So that character is gone. Doesn't go true to the actual movies. I mean, Riggs never dies in the movies, but now in the TV show, he is dead.
Just off screen.
Yeah, just because the actor couldn't, you know, the actor made it tough for everybody around him, so.
Oh boy.
Gotta can him. Isn't that what they did with Edward Norton? With the Hulk?
Kind of like, I mean, they let him finish the movie, but they recast him because mm-hmm. he was like heavily involved with the script, like even like made up a fake name as co-writer, but he doesn't show up in the credits. He's, uh-huh. I think his fake co-writer name is on one poster.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah, he just wanted to have, he had all of these demands, like he wanted to flesh out the character more because he really isn't fleshed out. He doesn't have an arc throughout the whole movie.
Right.
But yeah, he was apparently, and usually people tell like he is quite tough to work with. Did you watch Birdman?
Mm-mm.
Because he portrays an actor in Birdman, he pretty much plays himself. He's a very, very... He plays a very, very difficult, eccentric actor in that.
Oh. Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's an article somewhere out there of people that were recast or their characters were killed because the actor wasn't easy to work with.
Oh, but quite a lot. I mean, after that stuff of... with like Kevin Spacey
mm-hmm.
got to the surface, Ridley Scott recast him and it shot all of the scenes with Christopher Plummer for I don't remember what the movie was called, but yeah, he actually immediately went into like, no, I can't finish the movie with this kind of thing going around with him. So he just, he reshot all of the scenes with Christopher Plummer, went through all of that trouble, and Christopher Plummer got an Oscar nomination for that last nice. Year. So it was actually, that's actually very, very impressive, and props to Ridley Scott for that, you know?
Yeah.
And actually sticking to...
To pull it off.
Yeah, to pull it off. Tell us something about the release date.
Yeah, let's go back to Hook. It was released on December 11th, 1991 in the US, and on March 26th, 1992, a couple of months later, in Germany. It had an estimated budget of $70 million, grossed nearly $120 million domestically, and over $300 million worldwide. Is that considered a success? I think so.
That is a success. Even if you count in like inflation and stuff like that, and also like the marketing cost, that's still a success.
Yeah.
Especially for a movie that apparently a lot of critics didn't like.
Yeah.
So that you see, critics don't... You know, critics' voices don't really matter if you have the right people in a movie.
Yeah, do critics even pay for the movie? Who knows? I think it's the public.
Yeah, critics don't pay for the movie.
So they should go by what the public says, not what the critics say.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, some critics are paid to give it good reviews. Sony does that a lot nowadays, but who cares?
Yeah, who cares?
I found out some trivia I found out on my own just a couple of years ago and stuff like that, just for listening, and some of the trivia I've gotten on IMDb, and you can figure out which one is which. I don't know, but there's some very interesting stuff to say about it. So why don't you tell us some of the trivia, like we can do it like back and forth.
All right. Originally, screenwriter Nick Castle was considered to be the director.
Yep.
I didn't know that.
And they kind of he had the original idea, and then when Spielberg showed interest, they like bullied him back to a story credit only, in a way. This is another thing I found out, which I didn't know about at all. It was originally slated to be a musical as a vehicle for Michael Jackson in 1983, after the latter expressed an interest in starring in it and contributing to its soundtrack. Yeah, because obviously Michael Jackson was a huge fan of Peter Pan. I mean, he did name it the Neverland Ranch for a reason. But Spielberg instead decided to focus on Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and shelved the project until 1989, when pre-production of the film began, and so Michael Jackson didn't get to play Peter Pan.
Aww.
Which made him sad.
Well, that would have been a good role for him, I would think.
I don't know, in some way it could have worked, in some way it couldn't have, I don't know.
I mean, didn't he end up playing a type of role like that with Moonwalker? Is that the name of his movie?
Yeah, Moonwalker.
He ends up playing, like, I don't know, trying to save children from... Who was the bad guy?
Joe Pesci? From Joe Pesci and trucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was robots. He turns into
a car, a transformer. He turns into a spaceship.
If you haven't seen... What is it? It is called Michael Jackson's Moonwalk, right? Or Moonwalker?
Yeah, Moonwalker.
You got to check that out.
It will blow your mind.
It is a treat. But Hook, the particular character, doesn't appear in full until 40 minutes into the film. 40 minutes, really?
Yeah. I mean, if they talk about him, you see like the dagger in the door. You can see like this green mist, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in full, like when he steps onto a ship, that's the first time you see him, and that's like 40 minutes into it, which is very interesting. Why is it called Hook? But because it's about Peter Pan and Hook. But I guess it's a good title. The title hooks you in a way.
Right. Nice.
Also, something I found out, that Robin Williams and Bob Hoskins died only months apart from each other in 2014. Hmm. And after Williams' death, Spielberg tried to rewatch the film but couldn't finish it because he couldn't stop crying.
Oh, that's very sad.
Yeah, after this movie, they became very close friends. And, I mean, of course, that has to be hard.
It's always hard.
We had the Julia Roberts trivia.
Yeah, we already did that one. You should do the next one because it seems like there's German stuff in there.
Yeah, but this is something I found out, which is very interesting. The names of Peter's children were probably not chosen at random. The name Jack is a common nickname for the name John, which is the German tongue is Hans or Hansel, and the name Maggie is a diminutive of Margaret, which in German is Gretel. So if there's actually kind of like an idea behind that, well done, because Hansel and Gretel.
Hansel and Gretel, yep.
Getting kidnapped, not by a witch, but by a pirate instead.
Wow. Yeah. Well, this next one kind of took me aback because I had no idea Gwyneth Paltrow was even in this movie. But she plays the young Wendy in a flashback. While I was looking through IMDb, I did see her on there and I was like, wait a minute, I haven't seen her yet. It seems like she would have a bigger role in a movie like this. But one thing that I did notice is that she looks exactly the same as what she does now. Yeah. There's really no difference. She has not aged one bit.
We just watched Spider-Man Homecoming a few days ago.
Yeah.
She has a cameo in that. And yeah, she doesn't look all that different.
She is still smoking, man.
Oh, yeah. She still looks good. This is something I found out on my own. Because of a delay in shooting and a busy schedule, composer John Williams wrote large part of the score, I think like two-thirds of it, only based on the screenplay, and he retrofitted the music after he got to see the footage so it still would fit. And in my opinion, it's one of his very best soundtracks. Like, it's so good that after that, in all the soundtracks he did, you can still hear it. It's all hook. It's amazing what he did with this music, and I'm shocked that it didn't get nominated for an Oscar as well, because it really deserved it. It's one of the favorite soundtracks of my brother, who does a lot of music. He loves that music so much.
Yeah, and it was a nice score.
Yeah, I mean, it's of course, it has the usual Williams whimsiness, and it's some people would call it overbearing. I just would call it amazing, because it draws attention to itself and is very, very loud. You can hear some Star Wars in there. You can hear some of the like pre-existing ideas of Harry Potter in there. It's a wonderful score. Like, the hook march is amazing and so catchy. Yeah, he does a lot of great stuff with the score, and it's, like I said, it's one of my absolute favorites.
Well, it was a lot of fun. The music really puts you into the mood.
Oh yeah, especially when he becomes Peter Pan and flies around. It's so incredibly celebratorial, it's so triumphant, and also at some points it's very mystical, it's very scary, like when he goes to the room for the first time, and it's so great. I just can't say enough great stuff about the music.
Right.
And yo, this is a little game I thought up for you, because this movie also features several celebrity cameos, and I wanted to ask you, have you spotted them all?
No, because I don't know what would be considered a celebrity cameo in a movie that has a lot of celebrities in it already. The only one I could have spotted was Gwyneth Paltrow, of course.
And she wasn't a celebrity back then.
Yeah, she wasn't a celebrity then. But I did notice one of the little boys is one of the main guys in Band of Brothers, the HBO World War II movie or show. I kept looking at him. That's the reason why I went to IMDb, because I kept seeing that boy, and I was like, I know that face from somewhere. And then I looked it up, and I saw, oh yeah, it's the same guy from there. That's where I know him from. And it was, he looks the same. He looks the same as a little kid. He looks the same as a 20-year-old man.
Yeah, I didn't know this, but I didn't know about that. But yeah, of course, it doesn't count as a celebrity cameo. You spotted one while we were watching it. He spotted one cameo.
I did, but I don't remember.
It's Phil Collins.
Oh yeah, Phil Collins. I looked at him going, wait a minute, is that Phil Collins? Did that guy ever have hair? But apparently
Phil
not.
Collins, I think he plays a detective.
Yeah, he was the detective.
Yeah, the detective, he plays that. I think the scene was originally supposed to be longer and they cut it short. Because Phil Collins was afraid that his performance wouldn't cut it, I guess, and that he was like asking, like, was good. But yeah, there are several elves, and one of them, I didn't know who the actor/actress was back in the day, but I recognized that it was indeed an actress playing a man.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a point in the very first hook scene when he asked, like, who doubted me? Who doubted me that I couldn't go in the other world and steal Pan's children? And then there's one pirate who didn't believe in him, and then he's like, the boo box. And then they put the pirate in the box. That pirate is played by Glenn Close.
Is it really?
That's Glenn Close, yep.
I thought he looked kind of feminine.
Yeah, I mean, she has like this whole beard and stuff, and they don't even alter her voice. It's kind of like a female-sounding voice. But yeah, it's. I think, I don't really know if there's a story behind that. I guess she just stopped by the set and they asked, like, hey, want to be in the movie just for fun?
Wait, I did see her name on IMDb. I never saw her on screen. I guess I just threw it away as nothing, but oh, there we go. It was explained.
Yeah, indeed. Where are some other cameos?
Oh, are they?
Yeah. There's David Crosby. He's a member of Hook's crew. He's the guy who gets hit in the crotch in the battle, because they always keep showing her in the movie, and for the longest time I was like, who is that? They must be showing her for a reason. Is this some known guy? And he is. It's David Crosby. There are two cameos who are so well hidden, like you wouldn't even be able to tell it. But there are actually cameos by. Do you remember that kissing couple on the bridge who flies up when the fairy dust hits them?
Right, yeah.
Those two are actually played by Carrie Fisher and George Lucas.
Oh, really?
I don't know who came up with that. We don't even recognize them, so
no,
it's kind of like...
No, you can't even tell. You don't even get any close-ups of them.
Yeah, it's like a wasted cameo, but I don't know, just for an in-joke's sake,
right.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it.
Yeah, they could have just gotten anybody. Did they even pay him to do that?
I don't know. I mean, George Lucas was a friend before Spielberg.
Okay.
But I know Carrie Fisher did like some kind of like uncredited punch-ups for the final draft of a script. So I guess she was involved with the production at a certain point, and then they were like, hey, want to be in the movie just for fun also.
Yeah. But who else was in there? Anybody else?
I actually think, as far as a celebrity cameo goes, that's it. Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah.
Okay. That was fun.
Yeah.
Had some celebrities that I didn't even know were there. Glenn Close is the one that really surprised me.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a more obvious cameo, of course, but aside from Phil Collins.
Yeah. Phil Collins.
Phil Collins, yeah.
My wife saw, like, Phil Collins. And I was like, yeah, you know him. Genesis.
It's him.
Yeah.
Tarzan.
Yeah, Tarzan.
Brother Bear.
He did a lot of good music.
He did a lot of great songs. I sang some of them on at choir camp.
Oh, nice.
We did pretty much like the whole soundtrack of Brother Bear. That was fun.
Yeah. He did some good music.
But yeah, what do you... I mean, we kind of like went all over the place with this, but I mean, we got everything done we wanted to say, but is there like some stuff you want to mention about the movie, something you really enjoyed or something you really didn't enjoy if you didn't say it already?
There was a lot going on in this movie. Like, in the very beginning, I had no idea what was going on. I knew Robin Williams was Peter Pan, but... For a newbie that knows that, I had a hard time in the very beginning figuring out who was who. Obviously, I can tell who the kids were. Obviously, I can tell who the wife was. But then when we got to... Where did they go? To Paris?
No, London.
London. Why? See, I didn't even get that. I didn't even know they went to London.
They show the Big Ben and the establishing show.
In my notes, I had... For the longest time, at the very beginning of my notes, I had... They traveled to... ... And then I thought to myself... I will figure it out in time. And then I never figured it out until after the movie. I had to ask everybody, hey, where did they go?
You're not that familiar with Peter Pan, I take it.
No, I don't know anything about Peter Pan. But it was fun. Once you get the hang of it, once you start figuring out who was who, I was completely confused at the banquet that they did for Wendy in the very beginning. I was confused with the guy who lost his marbles. I still don't know what his whole... story was. At the very end, he gets the fairy dust and flies away, and I'm just thinking, whoa, how come nobody is looking at him going, wow, that is very strange, how is he flying?
Because he's one of the at the end of a Peter Pan, of the original Peter Pan story, like some of the lost boys, or like even all of them, I don't know, they come with Wendy and they get adopted, and he is one of the original lost boys. And so, of course, in the real world, he grew up. And there's always this, like, you have to think happy thoughts when you want to fly with fairy dust. And his happy thoughts are kind of like, he has kind of like these marbles. And so they do like a cute joke with I lost my marbles, mm-hmm. because he left some of his happy thoughts behind Neverland. And at the end, he gets them back, and so he's able to fly again. Yeah, it's a little weird, but when you're familiar with the Peter Pan story, it makes a little bit more sense.
Right, yeah. I guess. I mean, it's if you don't know the Peter Pan story, you'll be just like me, confused through a lot of this stuff.
I actually didn't know that you weren't familiar with a character. I mean,
no, I'm not into fantasy, man. I have a hard time watching these fantasy movies because they just don't make sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, some are self-explanatory, but some can be a little bit
confusing. Fairy tale stuff. I mean, the closest fantasy stuff that I've watched was freaking the Marvel movies. That's as fantasy as I'm going to be able to go.
You watched Lord of the Rings movies. You told me about that.
I did, but do I remember them? Not really. I don't remember what happens. All I remember is Frodo and the ring and the elf, and they're fighting, and that's it. Like, I don't, like... Backstories, I know they get betrayed at one point, but in a story like that, of course you have to have betrayal. There's no way that you're gonna go through a whole story like that and not have somebody betray somebody else. But I think it happens constantly. There's a lot of betrayal in that movie. And then there's a group of people who need to go destroy the ring, and they say, yeah, oh, sure, I'll go. Why not? And
there's a lot of walking.
And then that's it. That's the movie in Lyle's eyes.
Yeah, a lot of walking and fighting.
And then the two towers are there, and then the wizard, he's back after saying he can't pass at that demon-looking thing. I mean, honestly, we can do an entire show of me explaining these movies in my eyes.
It would be fun. You
would just be like, what in the world is happening in that brain of yours, Lyle? And I'll be like, I don't know, man. It's not my thing.
It would be fun because I'm like one of the biggest Lord of the Rings freaks.
We should probably do that for an episode. I could just sit here and tell you the whole story through my eyes.
Yeah, it would be interesting. What I enjoy about Hook, back to Hook, is just the big sense of atmosphere and the sets. Like, it's obvious that those are sound stages, you know. They don't look the most realistic.
Well, the house did.
The house did, of course, but like all the stuff in Neverland, I mean.
Oh, yeah, all that stuff looked way fake.
In a way it looked fake, but nowadays it's a nice change of pace when you just have them standing in front of a green screen all the time. This is actually, hey, real sets. And also like a couple of like the digital matte paintings they do look really nice. I mean, of course, it looks a little dated now, but it's still great to actually have all of those sets, you know, all of that real stuff going on. And what I really enjoy is the banter between Smee and Hook is great. They kind of act like an odd couple. It's amazing, especially like when
when he's gonna kill himself.
Smee, don't stop me, don't you ever stop me. Try stop me Smee. Get off your arse and try to stop me. I'm committing suicide. They work great together, and they have a lot of great chemistry. Bob Hoskins is great as Smee. I mean, he looks like Smee a little bit.
He looks like a pirate. He's the most pirate looking guy there.
Yeah, it's great. The pirate banter is fun. I actually think some of the, you know, a lot of the fairy effects still hold up when she's small and the other ones are big. Sometimes you can see it. It kind of looks like rear screen projection a little bit, but it's still like it works together so well. And it's also because we watched the Blu-ray I brought, and there some of the magic is lost because the frame rate is way higher, and then you can see a lot of like the maybe like a lot of the fakiness of the effects, but still, to me it's a very interesting. I mean, they got nominated for an Oscar back then for a reason,
right?
Because the effects are actually pretty good. And
well, you gotta remember it's 91,
man. That was still a couple of years before Jurassic Park.
It's almost 30 years ago now, or 28 years ago, maybe somewhere around there.
And you can still watch it. It still looks good. I really enjoy the food scene, because you when they have like the big Lost Boys eating, you expected something gross. And
yeah,
then it's
that's
just,
what I thought.
Because that's something you don't get when you don't know the book and the story, because there's sometimes they eat for real and sometimes they just play to eat. That's like, that's just a game, you know. It's just, hey, let's pretend that we're eating, and that's just a callback to that. And I think it's creative, but yeah, for a newbie it can be a little bit confusing.
Yeah, well, after the food fight scene, we get the baseball scene, and this really made me laugh. the guy on first base, he starts stealing second, and then the catcher pulls out a gun and shoots him.
Yeah, because Jack is hugely into baseball, and then Hook tries to lure him in by actually acting like a dad figure, because that's also like, it's about basic father figures and right. stuff like that in a movie, and it's,
and that kills me. That yeah. kills me. As a father, that just kills you.
Yeah, and it's very, very, it's very fun how actually they get into baseball, and Hook is like, very violent sport indeed. And it's fun how they try to please Jack and trying to lure him on the side. And Maggie is a believer, you know, she never forgets her mommy.
Right.
So some of her performance I find a little rough sometimes. Like yeah. every time she said something, you can almost expect her to react out, yeah, yeah, I said a lie, and a little bit. Like, I mean, I think she's cute and she serves the purpose of a movie, but some of it's a little bit, and she can't anything. Yeah, I mean, she's just a kid, you know.
Yeah, well, she was probably confused through the movie, really.
Sometimes
she, like, the as the character herself, the character was probably way confused.
Yeah.
Not knowing what was going on, yeah, where the parents are.
The smallest lost boy, and he's also one of those, where you can tell, like, sometimes when he's standing in the background, you can see him kind of like get bored and play with his hands. But I find that, like, I know some people who really don't like this movie because of the overall, like cuteness and the Spielberg schmaltz and stuff like that. But I actually think a lot of the lost boys, you know, I really enjoy them as characters. They have distinct personalities, you can tell, and they say some funny stuff, they do some slapsticky stuff. I enjoy those lost boys a lot, and Rufio among them now. Like I said, as a kid I didn't like him all that much, but nowadays
he grew on you.
Yeah, he grew on me, especially his hair.
That weird mohawk looking thing
with like triple mohawk. He has amazing hair, and yeah, it's like I said, I enjoy the atmosphere and the sets. I like the duel at the end.
Yeah, the fight was pretty fun.
Yeah, they treat it with the right sense of levity, with them doing a lot of their own stunts.
And they use that big kid as a ball a couple of times.
Yeah, that's great. there's a lot of creative stuff going on in the fight. Of course, there's the kiddie stuff when we're like spraying with eggs and fruit and also like weird color liquid, and also the 90s crotch shot, of course. You have to put that in there, but still, you know, you can see Spielberg has a steady hand making that movie. You can tell that he knows what he wants, and it's just all around, in my opinion, it's a fun kids movie with some darkness, with some needed darkness, because nowadays you rarely get that anymore. It comes back every now and then.
It is a nice, fun kids movie, but people are probably wondering, where's the Christmas in all of this stuff?
Like I said, it's so, very beginning.
So, here is the 27 reasons that Hook is actually a holiday movie.
Perfect holiday movie, okay.
So we got number one, there's magic.
Yes.
Okay, there's magic. Number two, romance.
Yeah, and they show him kissing the mermaids, which is kind of weird.
All the mermaids came up to him and kissed.
Yep.
I thought they were giving him oxygen at first, but then another one came up, so I was like, okay. Well. There's adventure.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable talks with your dad. Do you have some of those during Christmas time?
Yep.
Awkward family photos. I got tons of those. And mistletoe when he's being taken up by the vine. Yeah.
Oh,
so
boy.
I guess that would be it. This one was the one that surprised me. Jack plays in a little league team called Santa Series.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't catch that. And the umpire was a Santa.
Yep, I noticed that.
I did not notice that. The beginning of the movie takes place in wintry Wonderlandy, London.
Yeah, they shoot it so romantically, even Pennington couldn't pull that off.
They did. There's like snow falling.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's good. Where it snows.
Yeah, it's snowing.
It's snowing.
when Toodles opens the door.
Is that what he says? I did not know that.
This is England. This is the land of good manners, and he opens the door. It's snowing.
It says Maggie rocks some serious holiday tartan.
Yeah.
She did.
Yeah, she looks really cute in those.
Wendy is probably Mrs. Claus.
She looks a little bit.
She does look a little bit like
Mrs. Claus, yeah. Oh, man. This is modern. And also, this was my introduction to a lot of these actors as a kid. I mean, this was before Harry Potter, so I noticed Maggie Smith through this. And also, this was one of my introductions to Robin Williams, Dustin Hoffman. It's great.
Nana is basically the abominable snowman.
Yeah, the dog in the backyard.
a giant Christmas light is a main character.
Tinkerbell.
Tinkerbell.
She flies in. Firefly from hell.
Peter Pan dresses like a giant elf, number 15.
That's true.
Yeah, he does look very elfish. Number 16, Captain Hook might actually just be Santa in a pimped out red suit.
They're kind of stretching it with that list.
You know, looking at this picture, he had a killer mustache, and those eyebrows were killer.
And you can't top that red on his coat. Like, you can't.
No.
It's such a great red.
It's good. After all, his ship is decorated in Christmas colors and death.
The big skeleton at the front.
Yeah. Number 18, he's great with kids.
Yep.
He is, even though he says that how much he hates kids, or how much kids hate him.
He is really, when he tries to lure the kids on his side, he's really charming to the kids. He's very friendly, very nice, very calm. Hook has actually great charisma. Mm-hmm. You can see that he's a cunning pirate captain.
He would have been nice if he would have continued with the kids. If the story, instead of him being eaten by that alligator, if he was like, yeah, sure, Peter Pan, you beat me, I will take care of these kids. That would have been a better ending.
If the movie got darker, actually, Peter would have dueled his son.
That would have been great. Number 19, just super great. And then we get the
picture of the blankets
sheets,
flying
up, and they're screaming. That seems very, what's that movie?
Poltergeisty.
No, the Christmas movie that we did, Christmas Carol.
Yeah, right.
Like, just looking at that scene, yeah. It's entirely possible that Smeal is Santa Claus. It could be.
Because they do a weird bit at the end where, after all the adventure, Peter wakes up, like, in the park. Mm-hmm. And there's Smee just, just brushing away some empty bottles and stuff like that. And so it's like, is this a real Smee? Did he flee to the real world after Hook died? Or is this just a coincidence and he's a character who just looks similar? It's very interesting, but they don't follow it up.
Yeah, they don't do anything. He just sees him sleeping. He's basically sweeping up all of the bottles of booze that he has lying around him. Number 21, but he also might just be going to an ugly holiday sweater party later. You see a picture of him wearing weird sweaters.
Yeah, his West.
People make completely unrealistic New Year's resolutions.
Gotta lose £1 million.
With the very 90s workout montage.
Yeah.
That was awesome. There's an awkward family dinner.
Yeah, awkward.
With the kids.
With the kids.
The inevitable the inevitability ends in a fight.
Yep. Food fight.
Food fight. Things everywhere. And later, there's some drunk dancing, and then we... I forget what this character's name is, the one that gets turned into a ball.
Yeah, that character who also later becomes the leader.
Yeah,
he's
leader
great. He's one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, he looks so happy at the very end.
Yeah.
So happy. Okay, we got two more. But in the end, it's a movie about remembering how important family is. I like that one.
Yep. Yeah, indeed.
And number 27, the last one, even if your family is insane, and we get Peter Pan flying through the clouds.
Yeah, man.
So there you go. For those of you wondering what this has to do with 90s Christmas, there's 27 reasons for you.
Thank God you found that list, even though it's stretching a little bit for fun. I really enjoyed the points they make. It's great.
Yeah.
Those would be the same points I would make.
But yeah, that's it. It's a Christmas movie. What else do we have about this movie?
I don't know. In my opinion, it's just still a very solid, charming film. You know, you can still show it to today's kids and they would be a little scared of certain stuff. They would get into the adventure and fighting. I think there's something for everybody in there. I mean, there's romance, there's the theme of family, it's adventure, action, slapstick, some nice comedy, dialogue, banter. There's some great jokes going on, especially with Hook when it's like, where, like, a Pan is trying to climb the mast in his first Hook scene, and he's like, somebody give me a hand, and Hook is like, I already have.
Yeah, overall, it's a fun movie. I could do with more Christmas in it, but what can you do?
Yeah, I mean, with this list, you saw there are much more Christmas themes in it than you realized.
Than I thought the first time, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like we said in the very first episode, even just a movie that takes place around Christmas and has a lengthier Christmas scene in it, or like some memorabilia going on there, you know, it still counts. So that's
it does count.
And I mean, it's mentioned in on Wikipedia. It's there as a Christmas film.
It is there. It's there under the Christmas movies of the U.S. It was we have two lists. We have the TV movies and we have the theatrical movies, and that was in the theatrical movie list.
Yep. So
along with Die Hard.
Don't blame us. Blame Wikipedia. Blame this list, and blame everyone else. But we are just following the rules.
Yep. So here we are, and next week we're gonna have more Christmassy stuff going on. So make sure to come back for those things. But I guess for now, this one is coming to a close. What do you think?
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, if you haven't watched this movie yet, I mean, we spoiled some of it, but still, I mean, you know how it's going to end, I'm sure. You should, if you haven't checked this movie out yet, you really should. It's funny, it's emotional. It has everything a good adventure story should have. And it's aged, for the most part, pretty well.
Except
for some of the for some of the 90s kitsch that's going on in there, you know? And if you can't deal with that, that's too bad. I can. Like, I can overlook some of the most schmaltzy stuff because you can tell it's genuine. It's coming from a real place. From a true place of hardship, especially as far as Spielberg is concerned, and to me, it's one of my favorites of his, despite what the critics say, and it has aged extremely well. And I would recommend it to anybody who is interested in the Peter Pan story or just in basic fantasy, because it's actually a really nice addition to the whole stuff.
Perfect. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I will have to repeat everything you said because I pretty much agree.
That's good. I mean, I'm sure you didn't enjoy it quite as much as I did, but you still found it enjoyable for the most part.
It was fun. It was a fun movie. It wasn't terrible.
No.
We
have seen terrible on this show, people.
We have seen terrible. Believe me, we've seen terrible. We're not here to talk about that anymore. We're past. I think at this point now, we're past that terrible show. Because I think we're in what? We got to be in November by now. So, yeah. We're in November. Happy Thanksgiving. It's probably coming up very soon. Happy Thanksgiving. Just wanted to get that in there.
Oh, yeah. Happy Thanksgiving. Get stuff, just like the Lost Boys.
Yes. All right. So I guess that's going to do it for this episode of It's a 90s Christmas Podcast. If you'd like to send us any questions, comments, or anything like that, you can go ahead and send those to 90schristmaspodcast@gmail.com. I keep forgetting that the email is podcast. Everything else is pod except for that. So 90schristmaspodcast@gmail.com. You can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/90schristmaspod. And we are also on Twitter at 90schristmaspod. If you have a minute, please leave us a review on iTunes because those do really help. It really does help other people find the show. And believe me, I have tried looking for the show without punching in It's a 90s Christmas Podcast into the search bar. And we don't really show up. We need your help.
Yeah, indeed. Please. When you want to know more of my stuff, I'm on Facebook and Twitter at Lasse Vogt. My other podcast is called Fans About Films. My second episode of that was actually a German episode on Hook with a friend, which was fun back in the day. I write German soundtrack reviews for scoregeek.wordpress.com, and I have a YouTube channel, The Deppert, where there's all sorts of crazy stuff going on. Please check it out. Please find me. Please leave us a review. Like Lasse said, everything helps, and thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. Have a good night.
Good night, and bye-bye now.
We're the Elves from Tis the Podcast. I'm Anthony.
I'm Julia.
And I'm Tom. And Tis the Podcast is a proud member of the Christmas Podcast Network.
Join us each week as we rank, review, and discuss all your favorite Christmas movies and television shows.
Sometimes we agree, sometimes it's a verbal brawl, but each and every week is guaranteed to be fun. Come join us.